Judiciary is called to order. The time is 1:55, and the date is January the 18th. My apologies to those folks online and in the room. We had a ledge council meeting that ran over today and pushed us back a little bit. So without further ado, present for the record are Representatives Anderson, Guerra, Coghill, Gruenberg is in and out. He'll be back. And Representative Wilson is excused from the committee today. It was my intent to take up three bills, but it's also my intent to respect the schedules of other members and end at three promptly. So we'll go as far as we can, hoping that we can get House Bill 326 out at least, and at least begin House Bill 323. House Bill 321 is also on the agenda, so we'll just be patient and go as far as we can. So without further ado, Representative Meyer, first up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mike Kowalski to join me with your permission.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Fish to us.
Mr. Fish. thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 326 that you have in front of you includes the posting, publishing, and distribution of lewd material in the definition of harassment. By the way, I'm sorry, I'm Representative Kevin Meyer from Anchorage. Over the years, our statutes have been trying to keep up with technology, but as you know, technology has been changing so quickly with the proliferation of camera phones and small digital cameras. It's raising serious concerns in workplaces and in the public throughout the world. A person can easily snap a picture with their camera phone and share it with others. In fact, you have a camera phone there?
Yeah.
For the record,
Madam Chair, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I have just sent two pictures of the committee to the Judiciary Aide's email address, as we've said here.
Yeah.
We're harassing you.
And for the record, Mike doesn't have a shirt on.
Jeez.
And if this picture is shown on his phone's display or printed or posted on a bulletin board or left on your doorstep, it wouldn't be covered under our current statutes. The change to the current statute in this bill hopefully will bring our statute up to date and send a strong message that this type of behavior is not acceptable. And this actually was brought to my attention by a constituent who, with her permission, allowed her boyfriend to take pictures of her. They broke up, and he was upset, and so he was sending these pictures to others and to her, and to harass her because he was mad that they broke up. So when we found out about that, we looked in the statute, and there really wasn't anything that could be done, and henceforth, that's why we're bringing forward this bill.
Okay. So, so if with the intent to harass or annoy another person, so the mental intent is at the top. Okay, anybody, I don't have anybody listed to testify. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Anybody on the telephone line? Okay, so public testimony is closed on House Bill 326, but I can open it again if someone has a burning desire that develops to testify. Representative Coghill.
It's a question. And thank you for bringing it forward. I think excellent idea. What I don't understand, though, is the process that goes with conviction for a harassment crime. So since I don't know the context, could you help me understand how we've used this statute effectively, the difficulty of getting a conviction, and are we going to, in adding this, are we going to actually make any forward movement to those who do these types of things?
Madam Chair, Representative Coghill, it's a, I understand it's a Class B misdemeanor, and I really don't know how often the police have used this bill and the other six items that constitute harassment, but it does give them a tool so that again my constituent who had this problem, then we could assist her in the police department by saying you can arrest this guy and charge him with a Class B misdemeanor, whereas right now we could not do that.
Okay. Madam Chair, I hate to sound cynical, but Class B misdemeanors are having an awful hard time getting rising to the surface of this issue. Is this the right place to put this type of thing? Because it seems to me something greater than harassment then.
Madam Chair, Representative Coghill, there are stiffer penalties depending on what they would do with this, these photographs. If they're just using it to harass you, though, and to bug you, this is the best we can do.
I haven't searched that out. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, it's probably a lesser crime of other things that...
For the record, Madam Chair, this is Michael Pulaski, aide to Representative Meyer. The following statute, 1161.123, talks about indecent viewing or photography. Mm. And that gets into more of the type of situation that I think Representative Coghill is alluding to.
Yeah.
Particularly when the victim is under the age of 16, you step into the Class C felony provisions.
I remember last year we had a bill that dealt with it. Was it last year or the year before? We actually dealt with a bill that tried to go about when is a photograph rise to that level and not. And so that's what I was concerned about here, is that we're maybe lowering the bar. But this is in addition to, so, okay.
Representative Gruenberg is back in the room for the record. Questions? No questions, Representative Garrett?
The only other question I'd have is,
Representative Coghill?
If you're an elected official, does the repeated telephone calls in sub
inconvenient hours? Oh, boy.
How about appearance?
Harassment?
Yeah.
The Chair, Representative Coghill, this is Michael Pulaski again. If the intent is to harass or annoy, then...
Interesting. I just learned something valuable.
That's right. Representative Guerra.
Madam Chair, I understand the intention. You don't want to have somebody purposefully distribute sexually explicit pictures of somebody else on purpose without that person's consent in order to embarrass them. And I just want to, but I worry that the language isn't narrow enough. So, it seems like the way it's written right now, you're a kid in high school, somebody sends you a picture of another student that violates this provision. You send it along to a bunch of other people because you think it's funny and you think it makes a fool of the person in the picture. Right now that's like a prank, but under this bill that would become a crime, right?
For the record, Representative Garrett, through the chair, this is Michael Pulaski. That would initially be a crime under 1161.123, the indecent viewing or photography. If as I understand you, a minor without the consent of another minor takes a picture, distributes and shares, or it's not distribute, allows another person to view the production of, that would fall under that currently. And so... The sidebar on this piece of legislation is the intent to harass or annoy. So it's not necessarily the picture. One of the reasons that this fits is that the initial picture itself or the taking of that initial picture might be a consensual act. And since the indecent photographing of a minor is already covered under another statute, it wouldn't necessarily conflict with this. It's this used in conjunction as a pattern of harassment to harass or annoy another person.
Let me focus you on the bigger concern. So the more involved the defendant is in taking the picture, the more criminal it seems. But let's say all you do is you get an email from somebody else and then you forward it to a bunch of other people. I don't know. You can tell me what the existing law does to that person who presses the forward button. I probably need to take a look at 123. But here, it's the pressing of the forward button that makes it a crime. And
yeah.
You just need to understand why that's always a good idea as opposed to just sometimes a good idea.
Madam Chair, I believe the intent, if the intent is to harass, then I think it would fall under this bill. If the intent is just simply to as a prank or just to send it on, then I don't know.
If I might add to that, Representative Garrett, through the chair, if I'm forwarding something on, I might not know the person was in that picture. I might not intend to harass that person. The person that initially distributed the picture is the one trying to start the prank.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me be the prosecutor in this one. You don't know the person. Somebody sends you a picture. You don't know the person who's in the picture. You know it would annoy the person in the picture for you to send it to a bunch of other people. You send it to a bunch of other people. You didn't know the person who was in the picture, so I know in drafting this bill you didn't intend to make the person who pressed the forward button a criminal, but you have made that person a criminal, it seems. You don't know the person, but you do know it's going to annoy them.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, through the chair, I would actually, if Annie Carpinetti's here, ask her, because I think you're straying outside of any of my expertise. The other side of it, though, that I'd say is, isn't there a difference between knowing and intent in terms of how a court rules on interpreting an action?
Yeah, and I don't know if knowing or intent is the standard.
Yeah. Annie, do you want to come up? I know what you're getting at, Representative Garrett, because I looked at it, too, and when I first looked at it, I was concerned it was too vague. Well, I was concerned it was also too broad. And then I went back to the beginning, and I see that it says, with intent to harass or annoy another person. But one of the things that's interesting in the list of the five that are already there is you see some that are tighter than others. For example, if you insult, taunt, or challenge another person, the caveat is it has to be in a manner likely to provoke an immediate violent response. I like that because it gets you away from the teasing or the kind of casual heckling that you might do of somebody.
Les does that every time he speaks on the floor.
Right. But then you get down to number three, which is an example of something more loosely drafted that simply says you're making repeated telephone calls at extremely inconvenient hours. You know, that's where I think you'd go back to that intent. But I know what you're getting at, and I don't know if Annie could, Ms. Carbonetti, could you tell us why you came up with this, or if you think there's a way to make it more narrow?
Well, I didn't come up with this.
Okay. So
she's here for a different bill.
Just like you are.
Oh, you just happen to be in the room. I'm sorry.
For all of us to get through discussing this bill without actually mentioning any of the words at the bill.
Yes, we're all trying to stray from that.
Well, I do see some First Amendment issues in the bill, and I think there is a possibility that it might cover the conduct that you suggest. You know, you don't forward these pictures without, you know, I mean, we'd have to prove you intended to annoy or harass a person. If you didn't know them, it would be an issue of fact whether, you know, you did it anyway, knowing that it would annoy or harass somebody and the person in the picture. So you might want to consider limiting or defining publish or posts or you know, just narrowing this down a little bit, because the issue is, as we saw it, is whether intent to harass or annoy another person takes it out of, you know, answers the First Amendment issues.
Right.
I'm not sure that it does. That's a concern. Just forward button, is that going to be something we can prosecute? Doesn't seem like it should be, but under circumstances you might be able to.
Yeah, distribution.
Do you want that covered? Something for the sponsor.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, I see several things that some of them overlap what's been said before, but at least I'll put my thoughts on here. Since this is, I see we have to do one of two things. Either narrow the title or look at some of these other issues with the statute as a whole. I think that there are some drafting things that need to be done with the rest of the statute so that we don't have these kinds of issues. And there's a case called McKillop that I just read the head notes on here. And we might look at that and incorporate the holding of that, which makes the statute constitutional, basically. Mm. And since we're looking at this statute anyway, really with the help of the Department of Law and Representative Meyer's good staff and our own legal counsel and PD and whoever else is involved, making certain that this will not even be faced with a constitutional challenge in any of these things. I think when they talk about with intent to harass or annoy, I think that assumes, but is not necessarily expressed, that you don't have the other person's permission. And I think we want to be certain that it says that it's without the other person's permission. That's a second point. Third point, it doesn't... This gets back to my law school torts class, when we were dealing with invasions of privacy. And this is what's called an intrusion. It criminalizes the tort of intrusion, where you look in somebody's window and you snap them, and then you distribute that photograph in this case. And with respect to that, it would also, it seems, we should punish the person who does the snooping and takes the picture. And this only does it if you distribute it. But suppose you do it and you don't distribute it, and it's only for your own use. I should think that that should also be against the law, because we don't want people doing that either. So that's the third thing. I thought for a minute about whether this should be done, whether it should be a requirement to do it more than once, but I don't think so. I think even if you do it once, that should be against the law. And so, again, my issues are looking at the whole statute in light of the title, making sure that the whole statute is constitutional, whether we want to criminalize the taking of the photo, the constitutional issues when we're dealing with the whole statute, and making sure that it says it's without the person's consent. So I would suggest we use this bill as an opportunity of making sure that the statute is as legal and strong as we can.
That's Representative Krakow.
I may be wrong, but it seems to me like sub A, the very, very first part of it would show that if it's with an intent to harass, that it would be non-consensual. But isn't that true kind of down through this list of things that we have under sub A?
I think, through the chair, I think it probably is, but I'd want to be sure. I may be just gilding the lily on that one.
The only concern I have with that, Representative Gruenberg, is that you may get, for example, this very scenario you pose, you may get somebody's permission at the outset, and you may think that the perception is that you have the permission to do this much with it or not, but you have their permission. In other words, in this case, this was a consensual photo while they were in a relationship and so on, and then it went bad. So the concern I have is that I don't really know that it matters so much what the person who is being photographed thought, unless you wanted to talk about the crime of harassing them in and of itself, which isn't a bad idea. There are other crimes that address that, but if you wanted to create harassment as one, that's one thought. But I think what's more important is the intent that you have using that photograph directed at the other person.
Oh, no question.
So to me, I would have a concern putting the permission part in there, because I don't think it's relevant.
It would only be relevant if this is what this is talking about here is you had their permission, but then you didn't have their permission to distribute it. It's a question of what you had the permission to do. And the thing is, if you're getting them for taking the photo without permission, that's one thing. Another thing would be distributing without their permission. They're different things, but I think that they're both wrong, and you shouldn't be able either one without the permission.
Yeah.
We want to protect people's privacy, it seems. You don't want people going around snapping your picture without your permission in this circumstance.
Well, I would say, as Mr. Pawlowski said, it is against the law for under AS 1161-123 for illegal photography.
That was a bill we had in this committee for weeks. Representative Garrett?
Madam Chair, I think I can solve 90% of my concerns with the bill. The other 10%, I can't even verbalize that. So I'm worried about the sort of something. I'm worried about criminalizing something that's more like a high school prank than it is a crime. And I think most of my concerns can be solved this way. The way it's written right now, as long as if you have 20 different purposes to send this email along, one is because you think it's funny. One is because you think Brad Pitt without pants on is cute. One is because you think the person who's going to receive the email will appreciate it. And one is because you know it's going to embarrass Brad Pitt and you hate Brad Pitt. Well, then, right now it's a crime, you know, because that's one of the many purposes you had in sending this thing along. So I think I'm largely okay with this if you limited it to say at the end that the harassment or annoying of the person is your major purpose for sending it along. It's your main purpose. Because then what you're doing is you're really out to get the person in the picture, as opposed to out to have a laugh with somebody, as opposed to many of the other purposes. So if you put in at the end of this a comma and that says, with the main purpose being to harass or annoy the other person, now we're just making it a crime if that's your main purpose. And I think most of my problems are solved if we do that. Then it now focuses the bill on your intention behind it, which is those are the people you're trying to get at anyway. It makes the bill a lot more acceptable and I think a lot closer to the situation that you're trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
Another thing I see as a potential here, and I'm not trying to cut off the thought on Representative Cash, I'm just kind of laying things out that I see here. National Geographic, which all of us watched at age 11 and 62, I guess, too. But, you know, they have people in other parts of the country and they're breastfeeding and doing all kinds of things. And that now is, as a result of a law we passed, you can breastfeed in public as long as you're, you know, doing it tastefully. I guess that's not a good, but you get the idea.
Is that really the law?
Yes.
As long as you do it tastefully? Do we just make stuff up here?
I really think it's the law.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, Senator Ellis introduced the bill.
Tastefully, though. Right. That was his joke.
No, right. No, it was, yeah. But the point is, we don't want to criminalize people who are taking a picture with the permission of the nursing mother or something and
right.
Send a picture to the grandmom or whatever, you know. I think we need to look really carefully and do this right.
Representative Anderson?
I understand Representative Groomer's concern, but all seriousness, I think that you're right if you pinpoint there. And I know Representative Meyer, he's like me, he likes to move it through the committee if there's not too many problems with it. And I think in this case, it's going to be difficult enough to secure, I think, a conviction. You're really going to have your ducks in order. I mean, I look at Paris Hilton with her ex, and they both did that for fun. He wanted to make some money. Suddenly, then she said, hey, you've got a video out there floating around online, and now you're harassing me. She probably might have a claim. But otherwise, I definitely don't think National Geographic. I mean, I don't know how you'd think someone was harassing. It would never fit.
That's right. I that was a bad example.
Okay, just because I think that there would be a distinct, it wouldn't be a fraternity prank. I think you summed it up. It would really have to be proven with email and others or by, you know, someone verbally mentioning it that it's with intent to harass or annoy. And with Representative Guerra's addition, I mean, I think we can move this on without...
Representative Anderson, through the chair and the committee, if I may, I think Representative Gruenberg pointed us in the right direction by referring to McKillop versus State. And the headline talks about the state's and the court's interpretation of A4. And it says, when the caller's speech is devoid of any substantive information and the caller's sole intention is to annoy or harass the recipient, I just thought that sole intention actually fit in very well to what Representative Guerra was saying and would actually meet the standard. The other side of it was that the reason of the language of all the words that we all are trying not to say was put in there was because in the indecent viewing and photography, that has been upheld by the courts as a very narrow definition of what is obscene and lewd.
Got it.
So it's the combination of those two, but I think Representative Guerra's suggestion is fine.
Sounds like a Troy Malden email or a Obermeyer mailer.
When I was reading through the draft of this, it became apparent that the new section is really kind of a new idea to the whole concept within this. So, because really what you do in the first five is something to a person, and this is something with a person's image.
Yeah.
And so it's a little different stretch here. So in order to mesh them, you have to put unwanted in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have to say that publish, post, or distributes unwanted electronic photographs, pictures, or depictions, or something. You have to define that so it meshes with something that you're doing to them. Because at this point, that's part of the question. So
maybe it is without their consent, Max. I mean, you may be.
Well, it's the question of whose consent. I think you, Representative Coghill, are talking about the consent of the receiver. I was talking about the consent of the person whose picture was taken.
Excuse me. I think in order to harass another person, you have to do something they don't want you to do. So the annoying telephone calls, these other things that are listed, the insults and taunts that would bring you to a place of physical rage, to harass a person to that point. What you're doing here is you're publishing pictures of them or electronic images, and you have to say that they don't want that. And I think that's the consent issue that we're all trying to talk about. And I was just trying to figure out what word is going to fit in there to say that you're doing it to them, and that's harassment if you do that to them.
Through the chair.
Representative Broomberg.
I can foresee that certainly that hypothetical. I could see another hypothetical, too, that somebody sends a person through the mail or gives it to them or delivers it electronically, these pictures, and the receiver doesn't want to receive them. So I think that we should be careful that, or at least known. I mean, it may be to turn out that the person doesn't want to get them. But if you do it with the intent to annoy either the person who's the subject of the photo or the person who receives the photo.
Yeah, see, that to me, that starts to get into, that's where to me the First Amendment stuff comes in, because I think what they're trying to do here is keep it narrow in saying that you're really harassing the person who's the subject of the photos. And I think the concern is that when you get outside of that, I mean, I receive things on my email, my Yahoo account all the time that are unwanted. Some they're to join singles lines and, you know, who knows what else, and I'm sure other people get those as well. So I think that's where you start getting into the First Amendment. Sorry.
Tom started issues.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting point. I never had them before.
Well, I have an email from RussianLadies.com.
Yeah. It's odd. They're like, since your last visit, it's been one day. But I would have a concern extending it to those people beyond. And I think really if we keep it confined to the person in the image, And I think that, you know, the main purpose or the sole purpose should be there, added in. I think that that's a great catch, and it really just summarizes the ruling in the case. And then I think the final question we have to analyze as a committee is whether or not we want to make it clear that it's without that person's consent. And that actually probably is a good, I think your initial thought on that is a good instinct, that you probably want to say that it's without their consent, because you could also get into a he said, she said, where I give you my consent, and then later on I say, well, I never gave you my consent. And, you know, one of these kinds of things. And now I want to bring an action against you for harassment. So I think that ought to be part of the element. So where that should be, I guess, publishes, posts, or distributes electronic or printed photographs, da 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 da. Without that person's consent and with the, what do you think?
Let's do one at a time, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So let's take amendment number one from Representative Guerra. And can we do it a little bit conceptual to allow the drafters to, I mean, essentially incorporate the holding? So it's sole purpose or main purpose, whatever.
I'm sure. I think I have the specific
language. Okay. Got it.
On the seatbelt bill, I was burned by.
Okay.
Drafters on an amendment, and I'm a little wary right now.
Yes, you were. good point.
326.
Add at the end, after the word act on page 2, line 2, insert comma, with the sole purpose being to harass or annoy the other person. Period.
That's fine.
Okay, so that's amendment number one. Is there any objection to amendment number one? Okay, hearing none, amendment number one carries. So amendment number two, Representative Gruenberg, any thoughts?
Well, what I was thinking, it looked to me like the McKillop case dealt with one of the other sections in this bill. And I'm not sure which section it dealt with. It must have dealt with in paragraph A4.
That's correct.
And I would like to do a conceptual amendment subject to our mutual review of the McKillop case and counsel, and it would be the identical language as in amendment number one, but have it added on line 13 of the bill, so it would tighten up section A4 similarly. And I'm doing it conceptually because I haven't read McKillop, and I want Fish and everybody to read that so we're sure we're doing that right. But
so amendment number two, does everyone understand that?
Same language before the semicolon on line 13. That's amendment
one.
Is
the sponsor?
Madam Chair, yep, Mr. Pulaski just brought up a good point, if with your permission.
And this is Madam Chairman, this is my question on that is just, if the court has already ruled in McKillop and already interpreted the statute, is it appropriate for the legislature to come back and change it to reflect? I'm not sure, and I'm just wondering how that works.
That was through the chair. Yeah, it certainly is. We can do that. And I'm doing it in a conceptual manner with the understanding it goes to finance next, and if we feel it should come out, it can come out there. But let's just...
And the other question I had, Madam Chair, was, is that reforming Amendment 1?
No.
No.
Okay. Not at all. It has nothing to do with Section 6.
So, Max, restate Amendment number 2.
I see what you're saying.
Okay.
On line 13.
It would add the same language as Amendment number 1.
Its sole purpose was to harass or annoy another person.
Yeah. Because that is what McKillop is saying. Let me read you what the note says here. I think you can see it. When paragraph A4 of this section is read in conjunction with A1, intentionality, the statute is theoretically broad enough to punish political speech or other legitimate comment communication upon proof that one of the speaker's subsidiary motives was to annoy the listener. Because the scope of the statute is potentially so broad, paragraph A4 of this section must be interpreted to prohibit telephone calls only when the call has no legitimate communicative purpose, mm-hmm. when the caller's speech is devoid of any substantive information, and the caller's sole intention is to annoy or harass the recipient.
Yep.
Madam Chair, obviously, we were just interested in number 6, but if you want to use the same language for 6 in number 4, we don't have a problem with that.
I think it's a good idea. Otherwise, I'd want to narrow the title. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that one doesn't have anything to do with the other. But
right.
I think a criminal, to answer Mr. Pulaski's question, criminal laws should give fair notice to the public of what they do. You shouldn't have to go and look at a case.
I think that's a good explanation there. So amendment number 2 by Representative Gruenberg, is there a discussion on the amendment, Representative Guerra?
What are the words again?
The same words you used.
Same words you used so that it makes it clear, and this is relating to another part of the case, that it makes it clear that when you're making these anonymous or obscene telephone calls, that there isn't another legitimate purpose that could be interpreted, that the sole purpose is to harass or annoy another person. And so he wants to take your language and add it on line 13 after number 4. And that's essentially what the court said, which is that otherwise it would be overly broad and you would have First Amendment concerns if there were legitimate reasons for the communication. Okay, so amendment number two, any objections? Further discussion? Okay, so amendment number two carries.
Madam
Chair. Further amendments. Representative Gruenberg.
Now, this is just for the purposes of discussion.
Okay.
It would seem, and again, I'm straying on a little thin ice, but where it goes to finance next, it would seem that the same theory would probably apply to paragraphs 2 and 3, but I don't know. And we can deal with that. You can look at that in finance if you want. But it would seem that the statutes are so similar that the same theory would probably apply. And I'm just pointing that out.
Well, when you first posed the idea, what I was thinking is that we might want to, rather than add it there and having less as amendment, that what we may want to do is change A to say that the sole intent was. But the problem arises, as you said, that in sub 1, A1, it doesn't really work.
No. Right. So, what, Madam Chair, what we might want to do is to break A out into an A and a B and have that language cover B, which would be present 2, 3, 4. Well, it doesn't apply in 5 either. So 5 would have to go up with 1. But it would certainly cover, I think, 2, 3, 4, and 6. And that's one thing that, you know, I would think that we could cure this in a day or two if the sponsor is willing and rewrite this thing so that that language would apply to all the telephoning and photographing, but not to the insulting, taunting, challenging, and physical contact. I think that's a better way to draft it myself.
The only thing I don't know sitting here right now is when you're looking at 4 and you're looking at 6, you're looking at communication that could be interpreted as reasonable if there were another motive. And so the way you do it, the way it's distributed and so on, would be a legitimate methodology if the goal were a good one. When you look at 2 and 3, because I wasn't around when those were adopted, it may be the mere fact that you're calling over and over and over and over again at inconvenient hours, and that you are calling and leaving your phone off the hook so that someone can't use that line out. It may be the actual fact itself that you do that that is more important in terms of harassment than the fact that you could argue you had a legitimate purpose. And that's where I get nervous about adding it to those two subsections, because I think you have to have it in 4 and you have to have it in 6 for First Amendment issues, but I'm not sure that you don't really deflate 2 and 3 by adding it there.
Forget, so let's pass on. I'm not going to offer it. Yeah, let's not go there.
Representative Gere.
You're right. Well, I was going to try
okay.
to say
something. Is there any further amendments to the bill?
Okay, Madam Chair.
Do you want to do anything, Representative Gruenberg?
My question is, do we think that there is any need to narrow the title? I'm getting skitsy today with broad titles.
And I asked Representative Meyer at the outset. He informed me that the drafter preferred this title because there is a specific act relating to harassment, and that it's contained only in one section of the statutes. Then I also came back to him and said, remember, what could be added? Is there anything out there you don't want added?
Predatory fish.
And the only other, right, the only other bill we could think of was one by Representative Lynn that's out there that falls under this title as well. So the only thing we came up with is we could say expanding the definition. What did we say?
Madam Chair, I believe it was an act relating to the definition of harassment.
Yeah. So we could say an act relating to the definition of harassment, if people would feel more comfortable
yes,
that way.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
So amendment number 3 by Representative Gruenberg and Coghill is an act relating to the definition. Oh, my goodness.
Sorry about that.
Devastating.
We're okay over here. To the definition of harassment. Okay. Is there any objection to that title amendment? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 3 carries. Any further amendments to House Bill number 326? Is there a motion? Oh, Mr. Pulaski?
Madam Chair, I'm always leery to say this, but I just want for my notes to be, did the committee discuss the issue of without consent?
No.
In Section 6?
Yeah, we didn't get to that. Representative Gruenberg, did you decide you wanted to offer an amendment on that?
Yeah, and actually, there are two things, as long as you've caught my attention once again.
Pulaski, formerly of Representative Meyer's office.
Oh, boy.
Available if anybody.
Yeah. Let me give you his private cell phone number and his home phone, right?
Somebody, I guess Ms. Carpinetti was talking about the indecent viewing or photography. The, oh, I see. Okay, I misread that. That applies, this is to Ms. Carpinetti. Section 123 applies not just to photographing minors, but it's photographing everybody. Okay, that covers the taking of the photos. Okay, so, yeah, I think that to be certain that we should say, and this is going to be a conceptual amendment, to 6 only.
Yeah.
And my conceptual amendment would be before, on page 1, line 15, before the word publishes, comma, without the consent of the person being photographed, and that may not be the right word.
The consent
subject
of the other person.
Yeah.
Without the consent of the other person.
Yeah.
Comma, without the consent of the other person, comma.
Okay, so that's amendment number 4. Does everybody understand it? Any objection or discussion on amendment number 4? Representative Cott? You're wishing that you'd stayed up and pretended you were still in Ledge Council.
I had a meeting with Commissioner of Labor after that. Very important meeting.
We would have never known. Representative Cott?
So then the amendment's basically suggesting that I'm going to give my consent to this because I want to be harassed.
Yeah, it's a little odd.
I mean, because if you go to paragraph A, you're defining this. You commit the crime of harassment with the intent or to annoy. So I'm consenting to this because I want to be harassed. I don't know. It just
Representative caught through the chair. I think you actually make a very good point, especially if the conceptual amendments pass and we split A and B into two separate sections.
No, we did not do that. We did not do that. Did not go in that direction.
That's why I thought the syntax was unwanted, because you're with the intent to harass and annoy the other person. The person publishes unwanted. And so it seemed to me like you got a lot of words in there, publishes, posts, distributes, unwanted electronic or printed photographs. That's to me, I mean, they may have wanted it when they were in a private relationship, but they surely didn't want it with the intent to harass. And so that's why I put on, that's why I was thinking unwanted, so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my amendment is going to. We're talking about if the person, the subject of the photo, didn't want the photo to be taken or didn't want it distributed. Well, I suppose it's possible that somebody might not have wanted it and then liked it and said, yeah, you can have it, but don't give it to your buddies.
Well, they're publishing it, but it says to harass, annoy, you publish, post, or distribute unwanted electronic or printed photographs. To me, you didn't want them published, especially with the idea of harassment. The fact that they might have consensually decided to mm-hmm. post them somewhere, if they did it consensually, you wouldn't have an argument. But if it was the intent to harass, as in sub A, it was unwanted. So, I mean, to me.
So you're saying that it couldn't be with the intent to harass, unless the person didn't want it, that's it.
Sure.
That's fine. I'll withdraw.
That's what we're talking about.
I actually think that that's true.
We find it a lot easier if you discuss this in terms of Paris Hilton and National Geographic. I think Representative Anderson was onto something there. It crystallizes it for all of us.
Synthesize it.
Thank you, Representative Gehring.
Okay, so Representative Gruenberg, do you want to withdraw your amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so amendment number 4 has been withdrawn. Is there any further discussion on House Bill number 326?
Do we want to put the unwanted language in there?
No, I thought we've decided we didn't want
okay,
it.
I think
in the definition of harassment itself contains that notion.
The amendment itself was unwanted.
I feel like that's I'm being harassed just sitting in here. Okay, so is there a motion to move House Bill 326?
Ma'am,
Representative Coghill.
That we move House Bill 326 as amended.
Yes.
On to its next committee referral with, do we have any, I don't see any fiscal notes.
Zero fiscal notes.
I guess there are some fiscal notes, yeah.
Three zero.
With 1, 2, 3 fiscal notes.
Not anticipating a lot of people charged with this, I guess. Okay, any objection to that motion? Okay, hearing none. House Bill 326 has moved. You survived.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so let's take up your next bill right now.
Okay.
Do you want to, you've got to get up to finance. Do you want to speak at all on it? I'll open it up just real briefly and then let you go back to House Finance. And your committee did pass out my bill, so I appreciate it.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, House Bill number 323.
Excuse me.
By Representative Meyer. Tell us about it.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may, I'll introduce the bill. It's obviously a very complicated bill, I would imagine we're going to want to kick this around for a while. Chief Monaghan with the APD, I think, is online to testify on why they feel the need for this bill. Certainly, this is a priority legislation for the City of Anchorage. I'll just bring it forward. I know Mr. Pulaski will be here. Is Annie?
Yep.
Annie will be here to answer the legal questions. Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 323 allows the prosecution defense attorneys to apply to the Superior Court for a material witness order. It establishes conditions and sets guidelines for handling a material witness. It gives powers to law enforcement officials to detain a material witness. So what is a material witness? You guys I'm sure know, but and why do police and courts need the power to detain a material witness? We looked it up in the Black's Law Dictionary, and it defines a material witness as a witness whose testimony is crucial to either the defense or the prosecution. I introduced House Bill 323 because it's becoming apparent, especially in Anchorage, that witnesses with crucial information are not coming forward or helping the police. They simply are taking the matter in their own hands, and when they're doing that, you know that other people are going to be killed or hurt in the process. The spat of gang-related activities in Anchorage this summer is what brought this issue to the forefront. Currently, our police do not have the authority to take someone downtown that clearly has information that they need for investigation. The Diamond Center shooting, most recent one, though the people were present, several people were present and obviously witnessed what happened, no one would cooperate and the investigation has been and was stymied. House Bill 323 would give law enforcement the power to detain a material witness with certain conditions. The current draft is trying to represent a balance between the different rights and obligations established in our Constitution. And on the one hand, individuals have the right to privacy and the right to be free from unwarranted searches and seizures. But yet, on the other hand, individuals have corresponding obligations to the state, and the defendants are entitled to a compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in their favor. House Bill 323, there are several conditions placed on the issuance of a material witness order, and strict conditions are placed on the detention of the material witness. For instance, a material witness is, first of all, a person who would be unlikely to respond to a subpoena. Second, an arrest may only be included if there is probable cause that the person will not appear at the material witness hearing unless he is arrested. For the police, a material witness detained without a warrant must be immediately brought before the nearest judge. A material witness may not be held in a correction facility and must be provided room and board, similar to a jury witness. I've included these and other limitations to try again to strike that balance between the individual's right to freedom. I would anticipate, Madam Chair, that this bill, this act, would be used very infrequently and would only be used in the most serious of crimes. I thank the committee for considering this bill and look forward to the discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Meyer.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Pulaski and I talked about this a bit yesterday. There is currently a statute on the books relating to that. What's the citation of that?
Representative Gruenberg, I believe it's 1250, and off the top of my head, I don't...
Because I'd like to, if you can look that up, because I'd like to have Deneen make a copy of that. The thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is that this is going to be at a cost. There's going to be cost involved. There'll be hearings and stuff like that. And I'm looking at the fiscal note. I'm talking to the co-chair of the Finance Committee. I just cannot buy the accuracy of the fiscal note, particularly from the Department of Law. I think we got to have a much more realistic fiscal note on these things. And I would ask that as we deal with this bill, that we really sit down and have them figure this thing out, because it can't be a zero fiscal note. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, for the record, this is Michael Pulaski, aide to Representative Meyer, or perhaps former aide to Representative Meyer, but it's
okay.
1250.010a is the statute that Representative Gruenberg is looking for.
What is that again?
1250.010a.
We're going to make a copy of that here.
And as I understand, it's related to the bail of a material witness. Mm-hmm.
And then just before you go, Representative Meyer, I don't see it. I'm probably just overlooking it. But is there a provision in the bill for the protection of the material witness, their safety?
Madam Chair, I don't believe there is anything to deal with the protection of the witness. However, I would think that this witness is going to be extremely important to the police department, and they will provide some sort of protection if they go through all the trouble of putting this person in a hotel and paying their expenses and, you know, going before the judge. So to answer your question, no.
Okay. Is that something that you would object to if we went further with? Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, along those lines, I think that's important. And I would ask the staff and Mr. Pulaski, when we're looking at that, to pull up and get us copies of how other states and the feds have drafted their Witness Protection Act. I am concerned that we may be putting some people in danger. Maybe they deserve to be in danger, but they're going to go in danger anyway.
Representative Meyer, I know you've got your committee chair,
thank
so
you,
thank
Madam
you
Chair.
Very much. Okay. Unless, did you, was your question directed again?
No.
Representative Guerin.
Go ahead, Kevin. Mike, you're guiding us through this, but the 1250.010a has to do with witnesses in another state, so that's not.
No.
I don't think that's what you meant to tell us about.
Oh, forgive me then. That was. Madam Chairman, I can find that citation for you. I have it, but I don't believe it's with me.
1230.020? Is that what you're... You need to go?
We'll let you look at that and go ahead and take Chief Monaghan's testimony because he's got more important things, not more important, but important things to do. And so let's get to Chief Monaghan. Chief, are you there?
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair. This is Walt Monaghan for the record, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this. I've gone over House Bill 323. And what I've heard so far discussed on it, I agree with in regards to that it would be infrequently used. It would be used primarily for the most serious of crimes. We do have frustration in some of the ways or some of the investigations that we have done. But in some times, aside from the gang issue, what I have seen or what we've experienced is that we may have a victim who is for whatever reason, avoiding to testify. I'm thinking cases like sexual assault, where we have a serial predator out there, and the information that this one particular individual, that be they homeless or whatever, we're just not finding the ability to bring them to court in a timely manner to prosecute the case. So this could be used in similar kind of situations if we can to go through this there. But the area of the only area that I have concern about in regards to the gang issue is I could tell you that what would happen if we responded to a gang shooting. You could say a hypothetical one where maybe a car full of young men and a couple of them were hit with bullets, you know, from a passing vehicle. What we've encountered so far has been more on the lines of, well, I don't know anything that happened. You're sitting next to a guy who's been shot to death, but I don't know anything that's happened. And
that's not your fault. I give you the wrong side.
Yeah, it's what boils down to is our detectives, our officers will ask them, but they'll say, I don't know anything. I want to go. If the way this is constructed in the bill, we would be then take him down to the magistrate, which is probably going to be the on-duty replacement for a Superior Court judge on a weekend or after hours. And in essence, we'd be required to. And they would just tell the magistrate the identical same thing. I don't know anything about this, and I don't know why they brought me here. And the magistrate would have no alternative but to release him. It doesn't give us any leeway to explore and find out what information we can, or separate them into a point where we can maybe find a little bit of a someone who might be willing to talk, but not necessarily in front of everybody else, or because the time restraints are so restrictive. It doesn't give us a lot of leeway in that aspect. So rather than, you know, hold them for 48 hours like you see on the movies or television, what we'd be looking for is some ability in an hour or so where we can bring them to the station and try to talk to them at that point and see if there is any wiggle room in trying to get some cooperation. But failing that, then I don't think anybody would have any objection with the requirement to go to a judge and see where we can go from there. But it doesn't allow that decompression time, because understandably, the people that would be involved in a situation, they're going to be filled with emotion at that time. They're going to be shocked, they're going to be frightened, they're going to be angry, and in many times, just walking up to as an officer, just walking up to a situation where you're walking to an emotional filled individual, all they're going to do is vent upon you one way or another. And you're not going to get really good detail on what really transpired, not allowing them to calm down somewhat, letting them feel that they're safe somehow, something along those lines that we can give them a decompression time, if you will. So that would be my only request for consideration, is that there be some provision that allows us a simple 2 hours, for example, at maximum, to try to get the individual stabilized emotionally before we actually have a chance to explore what they know.
Okay. Questions for Chief Monaghan? Representative Guerra.
Thanks. Hi, Chief. This is Les Guerra speaking.
Hi, Les. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for helping with us with this. This is, I think, fair to say this is all new territory for us. Do you know, and maybe this is something for the district attorney or the public defenders, but right now, let's say you come across a witness, they don't want to talk, but you think you do want to talk to them before trial. Is there any sort of right to subpoena them for like a pretrial deposition so that you could speak to them before trial, or is the first time you can speak to them under oath at trial right now?
Well, providing that the fact that if they're already hostile towards the state anyway, realistically, they're not going to want to volunteer to talk about anything. And many times, they will ignore or duck subpoena service. And it's real frustrating. We have locates out on a fairly regular basis trying to find people so that we can get them and talk to them and have the DA talk to them or have the PD talk to them. And they just don't want to get involved. You know, just leave me alone. I put myself in that situation. I don't want to get involved any further. Just leave me alone. And so it's by the other rules that dictate the court, how they operate, we're kind of stymied in our ability to find someone, to get all the good information on an occasional basis, and still meet all the time restraints by that must be handled by the courts.
Further questions? Follow-up, Representative Farrell?
Chief, I might call you later on. I'm struggling here with the whole idea that a big part of me says you really shouldn't be allowed to arrest somebody if they're innocent. And so we're allowing a temporary arrest of somebody who's innocent because we think they might have information. And it's a line I'm very hesitant about crossing.
Understood. It's not so much that we're trying to determine whether they're guilty of any crime as much as trying to get them away from an environment where there is a strong code or an oath, if you will, that allow them or that prohibit them from talking to anybody about it because they will handle it themselves. We know, and we certainly can't publicly say a lot of the things that where all these interactions come, where retaliations go down, and people do get hurt and killed because they are taking care of it themselves. And the public outcry against those kind of things were kind of stymied, where parents of children that are involved in gangs, for example, they said, why aren't you arresting? We know who did it. Well, no one is talking to us. We have no proof. And I'm certainly not willing to swap our civil liberties to compromise them to the point where we become a police state, because no one wants that, especially us. What we're trying to find is a middle ground that allow people to de-stress or stop and reflect alone, privately, away from the group, away from the crowd, away from the gang, so that we can actually get some information. But they are in a highly emotional state right after the event. And finding them, allowing that to take place as best we can, as opposed to, I just want to get out of here. I just need to get out of here. I don't want to be seen talking to you. There is not a lot of wiggle room for us in allowing them to develop a rapport with a detective or, in some cases, even a chaplain if we need to talk about those kind of things.
Chief Monaghan, Representative McGuire, thank you for testifying today. My question, I asked the bill's sponsor at the outset of the meeting about safety provisions for the material witness, and there isn't anything in the bill yet, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. I guess the members of the committee have been getting emails from folks on both sides of the issue, I'm sure, but those on the side that are concerned about it primarily are concerned about the safety of those individuals who may be compelled to be a material witness, and they range. There's the gang scenario for sure, but then you have domestic violence situations where, for one reason or another, a person involved in that may choose that, whether we agree with it or not as a society, that in their long-term best interest for themselves and their family, that they in fact won't be a material witness. What have you thought about in that regard, and what do you recommend to this committee?
Well, in regards to the protection of witnesses that we have in a hotel room, for example, I can tell you in my tenure, my experience on the department, I have actually took my turn as a patrol officer and played cards with a witness in a hotel room because we had that witness on a 24/7 protection operation where they were rotating us officers in there just to make sure that no harm befell this witness, because it was a crucial case. And we did that long before we had this proposed bill here. So the idea, if somebody is has information that is very crucial to a case, it is well worth the money to get that individual who is responsible for it convicted. And if that means keeping somebody safe and protected in a hotel room, that is money well spent.
And then I guess just food for thought, and you don't have to answer now, but please think about it. I guess my concerns about the safety aren't real. I mean, I understand that there is some immediate concern from the folks who may not want that individual to tell you what they know. And so the 24/7 monitoring at the hotel covers that. But I guess what I'm thinking about is the extraordinary circumstance that may arise that threatens the person's safety over a long-term period of time. And Representative Grunberg made a great suggestion to the bill's sponsor that I know they'll explore, which is to look at what other states and even the federal government does with respect to material witness protection programs. And of course, you're going to have a range of crimes, and some are lesser, but certainly Anchorage is sadly becoming a place where some of these higher level, higher stakes crimes are taking place. And so I'm thinking a little bit longer term even than just that immediate time period.
Well, certainly if it's a crime that involves, or we can tap into some of the federal violations, we can make use of that and request that from the feds. You know, what saddens me, and I'm sure it saddens all of you, is I'm thinking of a case that happened over at the VFW where a young man was shot to death in the parking lot. We had literally 50 witnesses, and yet none, zero, has provided any information. And, you know, we're the police department, there's a lot of community pressure and to try to get these cases resolved, which they should be. And I'm not complaining about the pressure because that's our job. But in regards to, we're stymied where we can't force people to tell us. What I'm trying to do is create an environment where we can develop that rapport, give somebody some chance to dwell upon it, think about it, let them know that realistically, especially like in gang issues, it isn't about you, it's about your family. It's about your kid brother who, if something happens to you, he's going to get involved in it. We don't want to go down that path. Let's end it now. Okay. Those kind of conversations.
Representative Guerra and then Grunberg.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Chief, I'm trying to figure out a way to sort of meet your concern without allowing this procedure where you can arrest somebody without a warrant from a judge who's a witness. I mean, arresting somebody who hasn't committed a crime still is I don't want to cross that line, I don't think, if I don't have to, and that's what worries me. So there's this whole section of the bill that says you can arrest somebody, you have to take them to a judge immediately, but you still have the right to arrest the person. And sometimes police officers have great reasons for doing these things. Sometimes police officers might not have such great reasons for doing these things. So another way to do this, what I hear you saying is you want to be able to track down the witness and give them the opportunity to talk when things have calmed down a little bit. The way the bill is written, or what you're proposing, is sort of this 1 hour or 2 hour thing. You bring the person to the station really against their will, because right now you could bring them with their will, but we're assuming the person has said, no, I don't want to come with you, and so now we're seeking a way to force them to come to the police station, which is an arrest. But ultimately your goal is to speak to them when things have calmed down. And I'm thinking we can reach that same goal, the ability to speak to somebody after things have calmed down, and I'm just thinking out loud here, by just having a getting rid of that part of the bill and saying you have an obligation, if a police officer believes that you're a witness to a crime, to give that officer your name, address, and contact information. Then you don't have to worry about losing the person. You can find them later, but it's always going to be up to them, even under your proposal, whether or not they decide they want to talk to you. Even if you arrest them for an hour, it's still up to them whether they want to talk to you. So my proposal would be have a legal obligation of a witness to give you their contact information. This way we don't have the problem of the involuntary arrest of really an innocent person. Would that work?
Well, I understand that, and in an ideal world, that would work. What I'm going to encounter, though, is I don't remember my address. I just moved there. My phone number is 123-4567, and I'm not employed at the moment, so I'm looking for a job, though, and I'll get back to you.
Well, they'd have an obligation to give you their name. They'd have an obligation to give you their address, and if they didn't, we could write it in a way where, frankly, if they can't remember their address, you can have them bring you to their house or something like that. But I mean, I understand the problem of people lying to you, but that's also going to happen if you bring them into a station. They can still lie.
That's true, but what I'm trying to do, and the purpose of like I thought I made fairly clear was this detention. I mean, it's an involuntary detention. You take them down. You want them, much like we have kind of like with the non-custodial interviews, where we bring somebody in, we talk to them, no, they're not under arrest, we just want to converse with them. It would be more under that kind of scenario. And if the individual says, look, you know, after the time period, I don't know anything, we gave it our best shot, well, we know we're not really going to get anything out of him anyway at that point, even somewhere down the line, because investigators, the best time to get information really is fairly close to the actual event. And if they're not just keyed to the point where, you know, they're intoxicated or they're high on drugs, you know, because those kind of things will be reputed anyway. I mean, it's the alcohol talking, or the guy didn't know what he was saying because he was stoned. This gives us a better opportunity to make those observations, allow some kind of rapport to be built up, and take appropriate action if it can be taken.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief, this is Max Gruenberg.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Well, this is a very interesting issue because really, of course, criminal trials are highly adversarial, but this is a second level of adversary. Folks in my district, Mountain View, keep a low profile. The last thing they want to do is get involved with this. The police and the prosecution's involvement with these people ends with the trial, but at that point, if these people have testified, their fear, their involvement is only beginning. And the society, if we get them involved in this kind of thing, has a real responsibility to make sure they are protected afterwards, because particularly in my part of town, they could become the next victims. And we can't...
You know, I'm not going to disagree with you, because I know it's a matter of trust. And in some parts of town, we have less than acceptable levels of trust throughout the community, understood. But here's just a brainstorm as we're talking out loud here. I take you on down. You certainly don't trust me, but it's understood because I have the ability to take you downtown. And while we're there, you're hesitant to get involved, but I convince you otherwise that, you know, you may not want to say anything to me now, but somewhere down the line you may want to call Crime Stoppers, and that keeps you anonymous. You don't have to do all the good stuff that, you know, I'm asking you. I just want you to think about it. And where I'm talking to you now, away from the flashing lights, away from the sheet-covered bodies, and certainly not in the back seat of a car, heading to the magistrate to try to force an arrest warrant on you. It gives me an opportunity, me as a police officer, an opportunity to sit and try to build a rapport, try to get a little bit of trust, and if failing that, at least give the individual options, i.e. Crime Stoppers.
I understand, through the chair, Chief, I understand what you're saying, and I know you understand what I'm saying. In order to get the cooperation you want, ultimately, it's going to take more than just putting your arm around their shoulder and saying, talk to me quietly and anonymously. It's really going to require that the state has the ability on a long-term basis to protect these people.
And again, no argument from me. And it's kind of a my counter to that, and it's my challenge as a police officer, is that try to convey to individuals that the more they keep quiet about issues that are crime infested in their neighborhood, the more they're allowing that to occur without addressing it head on. Yeah, that fear and apathy are allies of crime. And you know that, I know that. If again, trying to get individuals to understand that. And what I'm seeing, especially in the South Mountain View area recently, in a matter of a couple of years ago, where, for example, one particular group from a church, St. Anthony's group, they were upset about all the gun violence that were happening on Rica. And what they did is they organized. They held our feet to the fire. And they initiated on their own a door-to-door knock-on and surveyed everybody in that affected area. And that in itself had a chilling effect because that was not apathy. That was action. And crime actually subsided in this area. So I can understand an individual's fear about getting involved, but it has to be couched or encouraged that collectively we will not tolerate this, and that's the only way we're going to drive them out of any neighborhood.
Thank you, Chief. We sure appreciate your testimony today. We're going to go ahead. We're 10 minutes past the deadline that I said I would impose today for members' benefit. We will hold over this bill and continue to take public testimony and continue to discuss it. And so we'll do that. That's House Bill number 323. And then the other bill that we did not get to today, the DUI penalties, we will bring up first thing next Wednesday. That's House Bill 321, and we will have no judiciary on Friday and Monday. So next Wednesday and next Friday, we'll continue to hear these bills and a couple of others. Our inventory is pretty light, and the rules of the court are for each of you, but I would only ask that if you think that you might not remember them, to go ahead and just leave them at your desk and write your name on them, but they're yours to keep.
Thank you. That is great.
From our committee.
Now, do we still have our three-ring binders? What happened to those?
We'll find those. Vanessa made three-ring binders for us, and
we'll
track those down. Yeah, he's got his.
Well, those three-ring binders told me all I wanted to know but was afraid to ask.
Yeah, they had. That's right. Okay, so without anything further? Say it again.
Madam Chairman, I believe the chief is still online, and I just heard him try and say something. So.
Okay.
All I wanted to do, Madam Chair, is to thank you and other members of the committee, and I appreciate Representative Myers for bringing this forward, and hopefully we can work out something. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, we're adjourned.